We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hour 3. Let's go.
One safety back, 10-point game. Packers throw.
Oh, Urlacher with the interception. Rodgers picked off by Brian Urlacher in a spectacular interception. I'm telling you what, that was a very difficult swipe by Brian Urlacher. Bears take the ball away for the second consecutive drive.
A lot of Jeff Joniak on calls of Brian Urlacher's interception. Defense, sacks of quarterbacks, tackles for loss, all sorts of stuff. And those guys do appreciate it. That's from our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here in Canton in the shadows of the Hall of Fame where Brian Urlacher is going to be inducted tomorrow. And we've been doing a show kind of celebrating Urlacher and his career, along with talking a little bit about what happened in yesterday's Bears game. I had some thoughts on that. I appreciate it if you missed any of the interviews that we had earlier. 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes Show is the way that you can check out what we have already done. We have already talked with Alex Brown, Thomas Jones, Bob Babbage, Charles Tillman have all been on the show tonight. And we wanted to keep it going with the guests that we have that showed up here in Canton. It's been great. It's really been terrific. So the way they set up, we had like a Radio Row type deal set up here where NFL on Sirius was across the hallway from us and Westwood One was doing stuff. They were right next to us. And thanks to Howard Dinneroff and Westwood One for hooking us up here with our table. So people would kind of go from place to place talking about stuff. Well, we pulled a couple of Hall of Famers aside because we wanted to pick their brain, especially about Brian Urlacher. And Terrell Davis, I thought, would be a really interesting guy. He played, his career lasted through the first 2 years of Brian Urlacher. And then, of course, you know, TD went on to do some television stuff as well. So he viewed him through that lens, too. I am an Alabama football fan, and TD went to Georgia. So he realized that I had some Alabama gear with me, and he stopped to talk. We talked a lot about the pro game, and I think that if you're a fan of the NFL, you will appreciate some of the stuff that he has to say about the game, past, present, and future, and you'll really enjoy the last 5 minutes because that's when we started talking Bama and Georgia, and it was a lot of fun. But we mostly talked about Brian Urlacher. So here's my conversation from yesterday with Terrell Davis here at the Hall of Fame. Thank you, Mr. Davis. I appreciate you coming over and hanging out with me for
no
a little
problem,
bit.
No problem, brother.
I covered the Bears for all of Brian Urlacher's career.
All right.
So they sent me down here to do all the interviews.
To do all the dirty work.
Which is fine. It was great. I'd love to know what you thought about him as a player. And I know that your intersection with him as a player was only 2 seasons.
Yeah.
But what did you think of him, and what have you thought of him by looking at tape and looking at gameplay of Urlacher?
Hey, clearly, you know special guys when you see them. And Urlacher is a special guy. And the things that he can do, I think one thing that impresses me is his range. A guy that big who's got the kind of range that he has, it's impressive, man, because it masked a lot in a defense. His recovery, when you're talking about play action passes, when you're trying to fool a linebacker like that with screens and misdirection stuff, he can diagnose plays very quickly. Not only does he have good range and hit recovery ability, but his tackling skills and his speed. I mean, it's just, you got the total package. A guy who was smart, who can throw. I mean, there's you know, kind of, everyone says a legend, but what he's known for is calling plays out, right? And when you play somebody who knows what you're doing before you even do it, brother, that is not a good feeling at all. And you're like, wait a minute, we need to be calling some audibles out here. Because Brian is picking up on everything.
I was talking to a couple of his teammates this week. I was talking with Charles Tillman and Alex Brown about this, on how they said, you know, you break the huddle, Urlacher would look at a formation, and he would know it was either one of two plays, and right. He would have guys ready and where they're supposed to be on it. When you can play with a guy like that, and I know that you've experienced this on the other end of the game, on the offensive side of the game, where guys are able to see things. You play with a quarterback right. That could see things before they were getting ready to happen. What type of confidence does that instill in the teammates when you have that type of person?
It just makes the game easier. I mean, the bottom line is you got somebody who's they've done their homework, they've done the tape study, they've obviously are giving you kind of the cheat sheet in a sense. So it makes it easier. You trust what they're saying because every time they say it, it happens. So you can lean on that person. If they say, you know, if John says, hey, on this formation, they're going to bring three, even though they have it might look like they have, you know, two deep safety. They're going to rotate the two deep safety, and you know, now you're throwing into maybe a cover three or whatever. Anticipation in the game of football is everything. Quarterbacks throw with anticipation. If you're a linebacker, you're blitzing with anticipation because you know what's going to happen. You're cutting routes with anticipation, knowing that the quarterback only has 3 seconds to get the ball out. That's what makes a lot of these guys great, because they've seen it. They already diagnosed the play before it's already ran. And Urlacher was really good at that. That was the one thing I can really say, that he was tops in the game at early detection and just being able to decipher what's happening, look at formations, personnel, and like you said, hey, there's only two plays they can run out of this one. And I'm going to shoot the gap on this one. I'm going to be there because I know they're not doing the other play, because we already got that, you know, got that defense as well. So it's I still marvel at his size.
Is another thing that Alex Brown said to me. Alex Brown played defensive end on those teams, and he said on Wednesdays they go in, it was weigh-in day, and Urlacher would always laugh because he always weighed more than his defensive end. So you got a middle linebacker that's out there dropping 20 yards that weighs more than his defensive end and is still, you know, one of the fastest guys on the field. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
It is. It's amazing, scary. I know he's got, like, you know, he played safety in college, and so he's got the foundation, already got that, and then put some weight on to be able to carry that in what he does. But, you know, I think that's the fun part about kind of watching football and seeing guys evolve and just knowing what you see is something special. And I mean, you don't know what that day, you know, you probably too early, but like, hey man, I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But when I was playing, I saw him, I never thought like, hey, I'm watching a Hall of Famer, but I did know I was watching somebody special. Like I told LT the other day, I said, LT, when I first saw you, I know you were really good. Like I didn't know whether, you know, cause nobody, I never thought in terms of Hall of Fame at watching a first year player. But you recognize that this dude's got some game. He's got something that nobody else has, or something that's different than what I have. And I respect it because I know how difficult it is to be different. I know how difficult it is to have a trait that few people possess. And then have not only the physical traits, but the mental traits too. You know, football is not just physical. There's a lot of physical guys who go out there and they look the part. They're big, strong, fast, do everything. Well, you got the mental capacity that accompanies the physical part of the game, then that's when it becomes. And then the third part is just sometimes it's just God giving. It's that it factor. You can't mm-hmm. even. Nobody is able to describe what it is. He has it. It's that. That's the intangible that we can never describe or say what it is. But it's apparent that Urlacher had that from the day he stepped foot into the National Football League.
Terrell Davis joining me here on The Score for a few minutes. Your career was short. It still ended up in the Hall of Fame. I keep wondering, when I look at the way that you played, if you would have preferred to play in this NFL. Because I feel like if you were playing in this NFL, the numbers would be even more monster.
You think so?
I do.
Here's what my concern would be playing in this NFL, is they've gotten used to having two back rotations, having specialized backs, and then not really having a back. It's coming back, but there was a short period of time where backs weren't getting 25 carries a game. That just wasn't it. I mean, Adrian Peterson may have been getting it. You know, I don't know whether it's Frank Gore, but there's a few other backs, but there wasn't a whole lot of guys. You know, Arian Foster may have been getting it, but it wasn't a lot of guys getting that kind of, you know.
Those touches.
No. So, and I'm a guy that I need lots of touches. I am not a 15, 10 carry a game guy. That's just not me.
The guy that plays running back in Chicago now is Jordan Howard is like that, where you'll look at his numbers and it'll be -2, -2, -0, -1, -14, -5, -5, -4, -1, -28.
Yeah.
That type of, and he's been saying, like, over the last couple years, I need my touches because eventually I am going to wear down a defense and then get the big plays.
That's what it's about. It's you know, when we were really, really good, we can go through a game and I can stop. I can have 50 yards in this third, you know, probably end of the third quarter. But I knew in the fourth quarter we're going to continue to run the ball. And what I'm seeing is a crack in the defense. I'm already seeing the big guys up front on the defensive side of the ball getting a little tired. They're just getting a little sloppy with lane discipline or gap discipline. And it's just a matter of time. And we just keep pounding, pounding, pounding. And then crack, you got the big run. It's going to happen. But that's what I needed. I was just a guy that I got to have 25 carries a game. Because, and then it also allowed me to be a little bit creative. For example, in the first quarter, if I wanted to bounce the ball, I'm not going to bounce it in the first quarter. What I'm going to do is make you think I'm going to go inside the tackle. So then you start to assume, okay, when they run this inside zone play, he's everything is coming inside. I know coaches go to the sideline, and they make adjustments, and they look at stuff, and they say, okay, every time 30 gets the ball on the backside 15, whatever it is, he's cutting inside. So now I can play with that. Now later in the game, I've been going inside the whole first half. Boop, now I'm bouncing that thing to the outside. You know what I mean? So you have time to just kind of play with things. You can toy with stuff because you know you have time. You have attempts coming. If you're getting 10 carries, I can't be patient. I can't play with something. I got to get it.
You got to make it happen.
You got to make it happen, which also does not allow you to take the three-yard gains that's there. So if you're getting 10 carries a game, you're going to pass up a whole lot of three-yard carries and two-yard carries trying to get that 4 to 5 yards, but you're going to end up getting 1 yard because you pass up three trying to get 5 to 6, and now you lost a yard. So there's a lot that goes on in how I approached the game and how I thought that I could, you know, help our team. But it wasn't just running the ball. It was calculated thoughts in it, and I knew when I could take chances and risk, and I knew when I couldn't.
Terrell, thanks for your time, man.
Anytime,
I truly appreciate it.
Anytime. I see the back of your
I knew I shouldn't have left
on the back of your laptop.
I was like, Georgia boy is going to come down here and it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and I'm not real happy with with what happened in that game. You know, I was at the game and I'm still salty about what happened in that game.
It was a great game.
We were so close, so close.
It was such a great game.
So close. I came down from the booth in the third quarter, end of the third quarter, for two reasons. One, I was getting myself in position
to
so that when we won the game, I could celebrate. But two, I wanted to get a sense for what the team was feeling, you know, because we're right on the bench. And when I came down at the end of the third quarter, and it was early fourth quarter, I didn't like what I was seeing on the bench. I can feel the team, like they were, the first quarter they were playing well, you know, kind of playing loose. I can sense a little tightness coming up. I can sense that they were getting a little tight, and it was an uneasy feeling about things that were happening in the fourth quarter. You know, that was they had the pick, in the fourth quarter. They were up by 13 points, and they could have – they got the interception. They were driving down to really blow the game out. And then Alabama picked it off. And then that just kind of
– When they sacked Tua, you must have been – like in the overtime when they sacked Tua, you must like, this is it. We got it.
Second and 26, I'm like, oh, we got this. All you got to do is just play deep, make them throw short, go make the tackle. Because the kicker missed the kick at the end of regulation. So they weren't going to try to kick the ball that far out. I said, you play the yardsticks, but you don't, you know, you make them throw short and you go make tackles. And I'm sitting there and I'm on my phone. I'm about to send out a tweet. You know, I was just about to say, congratulations to the Bulldog fans, you know, national champions. I'm about to just go nuts on my phone. And as soon as I look up,
The ball is
going basically over my head. And it felt like it was about 10 seconds in the air. Because I'm waiting to hear our bench go nuts. You know, I'm waiting to hear.
You're in anticipatory mode. Like, this is about to be great.
I'm waiting to hear us go, you know, excited that the ball was deflected or picked off or something. And I didn't hear anything. And it was quiet. And then I could just hear the biggest roar come from their sideline. And I couldn't see the play. It was blocked because I was standing on the sideline. And then I looked up at the replay, and I could not believe what I was witnessing. I could not believe that you allow this to happen. They didn't even bump the corner. There was no – they didn't reroute him.
There's a free release, and he was gone.
And he was gone. And Tua did a hell of a job. That concerned me too. That concerned me when they benched
when they made the switch. The guy that can throw now is in the game.
Because you don't prepare for that guy.
No,
he's a runner. And he's in there. He has nothing.
He's a lefty. There's a lot going on.
I'm like, that's just not good. And because we were really playing well. Had their quarterback a little frustrated. And then Nick Saban went to the bullpen, man, and
came up with some magic.
Darn!
But the Dogs are gonna be back this year. Dogs will be back this year.
Yeah.
I suspect it'll be the same thing at some point, whether it's the SEC championship game or the national championship game. I expect that we will see that again.
I hope you're right.
So from this Tide fan to this Bulldog, I salute you, sir.
Right on, right on.
Thank you so much.
Go Dogs.
That's Terrell Davis. We had a fun time, and he's walked past here a couple of times since. He just kind of smiled because he sees that my laptop is still up with the Roll Tide thing on the front of it. So that was a really fun conversation and getting his thoughts. I suspect that interview will find its way back on my show at some point this year because of what he said about Jordan Howard. At a later date, I reserve the right to go back over that because I thought it was fascinating that the idea of a running back that needs to get lathered up. I had never heard it explained that way before. I thought that his explanation of it made the most sense out of any explanation that I've ever heard about that. So I think that we will find a way to repurpose that sound later on. I imagine that it will make sense to discuss with Jordan Howard because I would bet you right now that even with the new offense, and I think there's going to be opportunities for a lot of people, that there will be frustration from Jordan Howard because he won't get as many touches as he would like, and that he feels that he's most effective when he gets more touches. So I reserve the right to bring that interview back at some point to discuss it because I think that that's some really cool, fascinating stuff. It's also great how many people are willing to talk about Urlacher. You know, I asked a couple people as they came through here about him, and it's clear that they've done their homework, that they understand what his impact was, and why he's going to end up with the gold jacket. And that's what everyone's coming back now wearing their gold jackets. And Urlacher and Moss and Ray Lewis and all those, Jerry Kramer, they all got their jackets tonight. So that's a big deal. You want to make sure it fits and all that good stuff. But I will say that one of the benefits here of doing the show live in this at the Holiday Inn down here in Canton is some of the stuff that people have just said to us sitting here. For example, BMAC and I said to BMAC, hey, did you see Johnny Manziel threw four interceptions in his CFL game? And I said that as Chris Carter is walking by, the Hall of Fame wide receiver. And Chris Carter just said, pro football is hard. And just kept it moving. And didn't break stride, but he was 100% right. BMAC, you can say something. You're allowed. You can talk if you want.
I don't have much to say. I'm just having fun.
I mean,
I said on Twitter, I was marking out at the 90s Bills guys here.
Sure.
Like Thurman Thomas and Bruce Smith. That was the first Super Bowl I watched. Scott Norwood's kick going, I don't want to say that too loud. Someone will come out here and pummel me.
But yeah, Bruce Smith looked like he could still pummel you pretty good.
Yeah, there are a bunch of guys that still, I mean, Moss has, I know they've been retired, what, 5-6 years, but he looks like he could go out there right now and get you 100 yards right now.
So of the people that you've seen here, who looks like they could still play?
Well, Daryl Green could definitely dust my ass in a race.
For sure.
And Daryl Green's got to be like 60.
I saw that you were like, you marked out over that.
Oh, yeah. Andre Reed looks great.
He's actually the next interview that we're going to play.
Yeah.
But he looks like he's in really good shape, too.
Yeah. Who else? I mean, Urlacher looks awesome.
He's
trimmed down a little bit. Not that he was heavy, but like.
Yeah, but you said it. It goes one of two ways. Where you see big guys who get really small after they're done playing. Or you see sometimes small guys get really big after they're done playing.
I sympathize. I can put on the weight myself.
Well,
so
it happens to the best of us. Who else? We saw someone else earlier where you were like, wow, that guy looks like he's in great shape. Who was it? Jason Taylor. Jason Taylor.
Yeah. Jason Taylor looks like he could whoop everyone's ass. And ask for seconds. That's what he looks like right now.
I thought you guys were going to say Jason Sehorn.
No, I didn't see him.
Wow. He didn't make it?
He would not be here. Would not be here.
The Hall of Fame for white cornerbacks is, it's just a phone booth.
Yeah. I don't think he would be here. Am I crazy or am I? I feel like that's Dez Bryant walking around here too.
I have no idea. I should go look.
The guy in the basketball
right now,
jersey?
I didn't get a good look at him.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's funny, like where we're positioned is right outside a bar. And if I walk in there, you can't, like, you would bump into Hall of Famers left and right. You know?
One just
like,
bumped right into you.
Like, there goes Marvin Harrison. You know, we've got, like, Bruce Smith. I can see Andre Reed. Like, it's crazy.
I meant to stop
Marv
Marvin.
Levy was here, too.
I meant to stop Marvin because he did a radio show with Zach Zabeman in college. Like, and it wasn't like he would come on and talk. Like, they had a show together. Like, they were partners on a show. I need to drop
could
that
you imagine,
name.
Could you
nope,
imagine
don't
Zach
do that, man.
Trying to, like, all right, Marvin, here's what we need out of this next segment.
I can totally imagine Zach doing that, by the way. Herbie, you saying I shouldn't drop the name?
Nope. That man
might.
That's a different man.
He was really nice.
Okay.
To us.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said hi. It was great.
Yes, as long as, you know, we keep it 100, keep it a buck, he'll keep it a buck. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, that man, his career ended. He went back to being Philly.
Hey, you got to be who you are. Am I right? Can't let the game change you. You got to change the game.
And allegedly, his gun killed somebody.
I don't know that that is
his gun
the
killed
case.
Somebody, not him. Allegedly,
I have. What do they always ask politicians to do when someone says something? And it's like you have to blank that. Like that's what I have to do.
Redact.
No, not redact. Like you have to speak out against someone else that says something crazy. I know someone will text in the word, but that's how I feel about Herb right now.
I'm in Chicago. He can't find me.
Yes, yeah. He can.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he could. But he could definitely find me. So maybe you should calm that
there.
Down a little
Herb,
bit.
Herb, we really like you, but if it comes to it, I'm
sell
yeah,
you out
we're giving
immediately.
You up. We are giving you up.
Like Bernie Mac said, I'm telling.
There's going to be all kinds of snitching.
All right. We need to take a break. Yeah. Renounce. Is it renounce? Yeah. Renounce. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. I renounce. Denounce. Denounce. That's what it is. Not renounce. Denounce. I have to denounce and condemn and disavow. Everyone's giving great words. Like they hit the thesaurus so hard. And disavow everything that Herb Lawrence just said. You're not going to get me in trouble. One of the Hall of Famers that we talked to, I'll share that interview with you next, the great Andre Reed here on The Score.
Sticks it in the belly of the back. It's Johnson. Hits the gas to the 30. Cut on Conte. Another cut before Urlacher brings him down and forces a fumble. Powell,
oh,
near side.
It.
Inside the 20. It looks like Bears football. Their fourth takeaway of the first half.
Jeff Joniak on the call. I haven't seen Double J here. I mean, I know he was here last night calling the game, but I haven't seen him. It's interesting, like, the people that I haven't seen. There were some that I was expecting not to see, which is why I recorded the interviews with Charles Tillman and Alex Brown. I couldn't even get Lance on the phone.
And you don't want him here now.
No.
Well,
I mean,
maybe for the podcast,
it would definitely be something that we would need to record. And because I'm sure my guys right now are nice, like they're real nice right about now. So I'm glad that we didn't talk to them here after it all, because everyone knew, like they even you can hear it in the interviews when I said it to Alex that he just started laughing because he knew that I was 100% right, that they were all going to be a mess, an absolute mess. So we got some stuff done while we were down here talking with Hall of Famers about Brian Urlacher. Oh, I meant to mention, NU Sports, the football season's coming up. You should get tickets. Their home schedule is crazy. Everyone's coming to Evanston to go watch them play. Thanks, by the way, to my buddy Nick Heppner, who works at Northwestern. He gave me a tour of WNUR before I left for Canton, and I was blown away by what they're doing up there.
95.5?
Really, that's WNUA.
Oh, okay.
I believe they're 89.3 FM is WNUR. You're the worst. So I took a tour, and they have Technique 1200s. They got a deck like set up if you want to spin wax on your show. I was very, very impressed. Anyway, you have to pay to go to Northwestern and be a part of the radio program. You also have to pay to go to see Northwestern football games, but the prices are pretty cheap, and you can get tickets at nusports.com. So, while I was down here, I've had a chance to talk with some good people. I talked with Mike Haynes. I don't think we have enough time in the show tonight to get to that interview, but I promise I will play that interview at a later date because it was a really interesting conversation about health after the game, and it was more about that than it ended up being about Urlacher. So I will share it at some later date because it was a really, really, really good interview. But I did stop Andre Reed. He was nice enough to come and hang out, and as BMAC was saying earlier, he loved all those Bills back in the day. So Andre came and sat down with us and talked for a little bit, and we had a conversation about the Hall of Fame, and he offered some really good advice. Mr. Reed, is a pleasure to
awesome,
have you
man.
Here.
It's great to be here. Hall of Fame weekend, you can't get no better.
They made you wait a long time.
But you know what? It doesn't matter. I think, yeah, would you like to go in first or second or third? But once you get here and once you're inducted and once all that happens, you're in a fraternity for life.
So what's it like to get the jacket? I know that they go through the whole thing of tailoring it out for you and
yes.
everything else, but once you put it on, what's that feeling like?
I'm coming with you, bro. I'm coming with you. You know what? It's a There is really not a feeling for it. I mean, you can't compare it to anything because it's like once you put that on, it's your whole football career and everybody that was important in your life to that point that had something to do with it. That's really what it means. And then to be in a fraternity with guys that not only I have watched, played against, a lot of guys I played with. If you would ask me when I was 17 years old as a high school senior, would I be inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame? I would say, well, that's like saying, I'm going to stand out and get hit by lightning. That's kind of what it feels like.
What was the point in your career where you felt like it was a possibility? That I know that you were worried more about winning.
Yeah.
But from a personal standpoint, was there a point where you were like, yeah, I think I'm good enough to be considered one of the very best?
I think when everybody started talking about it more than anything, you know, I still was a player and, you know, oh, you caught five passes, you passed this guy, or you caught three and then you passed this guy, and this guy's a Hall of Famer. And I think towards the end of my career, it really became like more I started thinking about it. You can't not think about it when somebody keeps asking you all the time. And you say, yeah, well, maybe I am, you know, maybe I am Hall worthy in a way. And if it happens, it's a blessing, and it's something that you can't even describe. And to be and you got all these guys here, so funny. But
is that John Randall who's just screaming at you?
Yeah. So for that to happen, it's you look at the first time you put the helmet on, and all the people that were all the way up there till you put that jacket on. It's an amazing feeling, no doubt about it.
As you were walking down the hallway, you were nice enough to stop for Chicago. Obviously,
Chi-town, man, I love it.
Brian Urlacher is going in into the Hall of Fame.
Very deserving.
What did you think of him as a player?
I mean, Brian Urlacher is just, man, I think next to Ray Lewis, Mike Singletary, Dick Butkus, Robert Brazel, who's going in, you know, top five linebackers of all time, that you knew whenever number 54 was in the middle, that not only did he command the defense, but everybody looked at him for guidance. And it's really, as a Hall of Famer, it's not really what you did on the field. It's how people perceived you when you were on the field. When somebody saw you, they knew that they can count on you, and I had to live up to that standard. And I think when Brian Urlacher played, that's the way he played the game.
I spent the majority of my career as a reporter covering those teams that Urlacher was on. And this week, I've been watching a lot of tape of Urlacher just to get re-familiar with the greatness. And the thing that I was struck with was how he was able to drop back into coverage, where ordinarily middle linebackers, you don't see them. Like, they're out there cracking heads. This guy was dropping 20, 25 yards, covering the deep middle. And I saw a stat the other day that blew me away, that right now, he hasn't played in 5 years, right now he is still in the top five between 2006 and last season of interceptions and passes defended for middle linebackers. That's insane.
And it's a testament to him as a player, because he was so physical and he had to get in the gaps and he had to stop the run. But the game changed when he came in the league. Five wides, they spread everything out, so he had to drop in coverage, and the defensive coordinator was confident enough in him that he could drop and get in lanes and make and have interceptions, and not only plug the holes, but he can drop in coverage too, and that's pretty rare for a middle linebacker to do. Ray Lewis did it. Obviously, he's here because he's a Hall of Famer and what he did, but the monsters of the Midway, man. You know, that's him, Singletary, and Dick Butkus, three greatest linebackers ever playing in Chicago.
I would add Bill George. People always forget Bill George because, you know, they weren't around when Bill George.
And they mentioned Joe Fortunato, too.
Yeah.
That's been the name bandied about all week.
The thing is, you know, Bill George kind of created middle linebacker, so. But whatever. It's fine. It's fine. But I always like to, whenever we start talking about the Bears Hall of Famers, like, that's the name that gets forgotten. So I like to just let people know, because I talked with some people, you know, back in the day that knew a thing or two about Bill George, and they were like, don't forget Bill George, and here's why. So it's nice to share that. A bunch of the guys are now all here. It's I wish I could better do a better job of describing what I'm seeing right now and what I've seen over the last like 30 minutes. Because I don't think that I've done it justice for the audience listening at home, where you look up and the greatest players that you've ever seen are just kind of like, what's up, and walking past.
It's like a wedding reception with no wedding, but every guest that's invited is like somebody you've watched play.
Yeah.
And Lawrence, I talk about this, I mention it with you, like the current players, right, we're professionals, so you maintain an air of professionalism around players that maybe you've covered their games. I haven't been in an NFL locker room, but like NBA players, I've been in some Bulls locker rooms. But for this, I mean, I mentioned to you in the break, the first Super Bowl I ever watched was Super Bowl 25, the Scott Norwood. And to see Bruce Smith here, who had a safety in that game, who was an amazing player, and then his teammates. He's walking with Thurman Thomas. I mean, those guys should have won a damn Super Bowl, by the way.
Sure.
But I am completely marking out for all of this. Darryl Green, who played, what, 1,000 years in the league, you know, who was one of the greatest corners of all time. Tim Brown walked by. I mean, you know, like, I got tapped on the shoulder by Marvin Harrison, as we mentioned in the last segment. It's just been, it's crazy.
I've enjoyed watching Bruce Smith walk by a couple times. And just, like, you can just, like, there's some guys, like, man, I get why people are terrified of you. Like, you might be the nicest person ever, but I totally get it. Like, you're terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even now.
Like, and Anthony Munoz is in good shape. He's thin. But you just imagine, like, you see him. And I'm like, he could like, knock over one of these walls if he wanted to and just go to his car.
And he's just like, yeah, my fingers don't work. But it doesn't matter. It got me to where I am. So, maybe when I'll have some time to think about it on the drive back to Cleveland tonight and the flight back home on Sunday. But I'm looking forward to more eloquently talking about everything I'm seeing here.
And the other thing is, it takes me a minute with some of the guys. Like, the recall doesn't come back. So I'm like, oh, that's Willie Rofe.
Right.
Oh, Jonathan Ogden. Like, Jonathan Ogden walked right by us.
And a couple times.
Yeah, he's fairly thin compared to what he was playing at.
Yeah.
And I didn't recognize him. And I was like, oh, wait a minute.
I heard Joe Thomas.
Orlando Pace was here, too.
I think he was doing Levitard's show. And he had said that he had to wake up and eat to keep weight on. And so he's waking up and drinking a milkshake in the middle of the night. So when he stopped playing at the end of last year, when he's like, I'm done playing, he didn't have to do that anymore. And, like, 50 pounds melted away, like, nothing on him. And so you see a guy that was – remember the playoffs this year where he was standing next to LeBron? And we're like, who's that small guy next to LeBron? And you're like, oh, it's Joe Thomas.
Yeah, it's like the second most famous Cleveland athlete of the last 15 years.
Right.
10 years.
One of the best players you've ever seen. And now he – it also tells you how – damn big LeBron is, too. When you're like, oh, that guy played left tackle in the NFL. And LeBron's about the same size as he is. And is bigger now than what Joe Thomas is. So it's pretty crazy. All right, we need to take a break. Glad you got to hear all of the interviews tonight. I had a fun time putting tonight's show together. And hopefully it gives you a great mosaic of Brian Urlacher's career. The interviews don't stop, by the way. Nick Szczepkowski did an interview with the Hall of Famer. I'm going to talk with him about that coming up next here on The Score.
Nick Szczepkowski
is going to be taking over The Score airwaves after I am done here at 9 o'clock. Shep, you would have been happy. I found a picture of our guy, Doug Buffone, at the Hall of Fame.
I saw you tweet that or put it on Instagram, one of the social media networks earlier today. Yeah, him hugging, was it Dick Butkus in the photo?
It's nice to know. No, they were tackling a lion.
I wouldn't say it was a hug.
Yeah.
Well, a different kind of hug.
They had sandwiched a Lions player. And it is the thing that, look, you run into cool pictures all over the hall, and there's some great, There's some great football cards in the hall. There's a whole exhibit on it, which is great. There's one in particular I didn't know. I guess the first football card was a guy named Henry Stowe, who was nicknamed Harry Stowe because his auntie was Harriet Beecher Stowe. So I was just sitting there going, oh, here's a couple of my worlds colliding right here. I can enjoy this very much. But the thing that that struck me was this picture of Doug and Butkus is wall length. So it's not just like a little photograph. Like they put Doug's on the wall Hall of Fame. So like that got me like super excited.
Yeah, that's really cool. I was only in the Hall of Fame probably 10 years ago now. It was right before I was a senior year started in college, and it was like the week before the ceremonies went, and I forgot the players that went in there. But it was awesome to see. It's the only one of the four major sports Hall of Fames I've been to, and it was just cool because I always grew up, I always had this fascination with the Steel Curtain and the Steelers teams of the 70s, just because it's historic and it's about as good as it got dynasty-wise in the NFL. And they happened to that week, and there must have been a Steeler going in, because they had this special Steelers exhibit, and they had a ton of like Joe Green's jersey that was in the Coke commercial and like all the most random, obscure, crazy stuff. And it was a blast to see a bunch of that stuff up close.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that you, of all people, come down here. Like, next year, you should, even though there won't be a bear going in, you should come down for this. Because I think that you would get a kick out of it. Like, if you were, I wish I could tell you, like, all the stuff that we're seeing. Like, we're just gold jacket after gold jacket after gold jacket. Hall of Famer Sam, what's happening?
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm happy Brendan's there, too, because I saw his tweet about the Bills earlier. I heard him mention it also a half hour or so ago when you guys were kind of talking about that part of it. How many guys has he gone up to and said or asked them about their Tecmo Bowl ratings and how good they were in Tecmo Bowl?
If I had to do this over again, I would have brought like a portable, like a mini TV. I'd have brought my Nintendo. I'd have had the game up with the Bills, and I'd have been like, hey, Thurman, why don't you get your ass right here, sit next to me, and let's play. I'm going to be you. You can be whoever you want, and we're playing.
Yeah, and then he takes LT and the Giants and sacks your ass every play.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how it works.
QB Bills.
Yeah, and it's like the thing is I have this Super NES that has the 300 games on it. Bring that down. It's small. It's this small. As small as our little microphone box that we have. So that's easily done. But, yeah, Shep, I think that you would appreciate it for a couple of reasons. I think that you would get like the Midwestern small town sensibility that is Canton, Ohio.
Well,
I think you would enjoy it.
When I was there, they had one of the first things when you walked into I forget what the exhibit was or if it was just to the base of the Hall of Fame in the first room you go in. But it was kind of how professional football started.
Yep.
And one of the first things that they showed, at least back in 07 when I was there, was this trophy made out of a piece of coal that two towns played for each and every year. And it's like, how fitting is that? Kid from Coal City walks into the Hall of Fame, and what's one of the first two or three things that he sees when he gets in there? It's a football trophy, a rivalry trophy played for essentially a chiseled-out piece of coal. Thought that was pretty cool.
It's the Fossil Fuel Championship.
It's your
nothing
life
screams,
story playing
yeah.
out at the Football Hall of Fame.
Right,
we're playing for the natural gas trophy next year.
Right.
We're playing to heat our homes.
But it is, and now that goes off on another tangent, speaking of weird rivalry trophies, are you guys aware of the trophy the Lions and Browns play for each and every late summer?
The Turd in the Punch Bowl trophy.
Essentially, they have a...
Wait. They play for a trophy?
They have a rivalry trophy that they play for because they play in the preseason every year, or at least they have for a number of years. Maybe they've missed a year here or a year there, but they play for a trophy of it's like a giant trophy of a barge. On one side it says Lions, the other side it says Browns, and whoever wins like preseason week 2 or 3 or whatever the heck it is given this trophy, and they have to celebrate as if it was actually meaningful of some sort.
They have to celebrate on an actual barge.
Right.
Which is like the most Midwest thing of all time.
Well,
right.
Well, what do the Bears and the Browns have? Because apparently they love to play each other.
Well, they stopped playing this year, didn't they?
Are they not the last preseason game this year?
Like the first time in decades. Like probably 20 years, I would say. Well, since the Browns came back.
Last year was the year that the Browns were on the schedule.
Mm-hmm. But they always do because it's like the fourth game. Doesn't matter. Where's a quick trip that teams
right,
can
nice,
get to?
A nice, quick, easy trip to the other conference.
Yeah, 45-minute flight or whatever it is to Cleveland from here. Not a team that you're going to see besides once every 4 years because of the scheduling of the league. Get out of there. Get out of harm's way without any injuries and without revealing too much of a playbook or anything to a team that you're going to see. So I guess it made all the sense in the world, but man. Bears Browns. I don't know what I'm going to do in week four of the preseason this year when that's not happening.
I had no idea. I got my Bears media guy with me, I think. Who are they playing?
They've got the Bengals.
Week five.
The Bengals and the Bills.
Okay.
And
here we
go. I think they play the Cardinals.
They played the Ravens. Bengals next week. Then Denver. Then
in Denver.
The Chiefs.
Oh, Chiefs.
So the Chiefs becomes that's the game that we're going to be looking at because that's the fourth one.
There you go. Maybe they
and
can
so
start
the fourth
a rivalry.
One, the fourth one becomes the third one, and then you get the Bills on the 30th.
There we go. So what's the – there's always – whenever I'm at one of these events, whether it's been a Final Four, hear stories of at Radio Row at the Super Bowl, any of these type of events where there's big deal after big deal – what's like the most random place or random thing, random like megastar, Hall of Famer you've seen in the strangest setting over the last couple of days?
You know, the settings haven't been that strange because everywhere that I've been has been, it's like, well, you know, like it makes sense because there's an event. But it literally like just happened again. We keep seeing John Randall.
Yeah.
Does he have the face paint on?
It makes me smile.
That's
so much.
That's why I didn't recognize him at first. He didn't have the face.
Didn't know what his face actually looked like.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes me smile so much because he is still John Randall.
Basically, you look at this and it's like, oh, you kicked the Bears' ass in the 90s.
Right.
You kicked the Bears' ass in the 90s. You kicked, you know, it's like.
You used to kick the Bears' ass back in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's probably the most random thing. Oh, there was something random that happened to me on a bus. I mean, this is more my thing of not seeing.
On Jerome Bettis?
No. But Franco Harris did just walk by.
Jerome Bettis was here earlier too.
He was?
Yeah, he came by
like
real
to
quick
talk with him. Anyway, any hoozle, I'm on the shuttle back to the parking lot from the museum. And this guy's like, "Oh man, I love you on the score." And I'm like, "Oh, that's great." He's like, "Where's Waddle and Sylvie?" And I was like, "I don't know. I would guess back in Chicago, or somewhere in the suburbs where they probably live." And then he was looking at me like, "Oh, you're being a bad guy." I'm like, I don't work with them, sir. Like, I barely know them.
Yeah, you do. You're Jonathan Hood.
Yeah. I was waiting for that. Yeah. Hey, you're Riles, right?
Well, I still remember to this day, probably 10 years ago or so, when Who You Crappin' was still a thing, and Jay Hood took a Who You Crappin' for something Lawrence Holmes said.
Huh? Yeah, he deserved it. He truly, truly deserved it. Chef, what are you going to do on the show tonight? Because I heard you got a Hall of Famer on the show.
Yeah, I do. We are going to talk about Javi Baez, his case for MVP. Not so much like, oh, should he win it, should he not win it? But there's a certain statistic that everyone brings up that is like an old fallback of modern baseball. And I want to kind of get into that a little bit, share some Urlacher memories. And yeah, like you mentioned, Jerry Kramer goes into the Hall of Fame officially tomorrow. He was kind enough, Brendan helped set it up actually yesterday afternoon, but he was kind enough to give me about 15 minutes of his time yesterday. And some great stories. If you're an older Bears fan, if you like the history of the NFL, the Bears-Packers rivalry.
The kid. You got the kid?
He has a great story in there about, I guess, Bart Starr kind of earning his stripes, and it happened to be a game against the Bears. Some Vince Lombardi stories in there as well. Some great old-time football stuff with Jerry Kramer we have coming up here later on tonight as well.
Shep, I appreciate it. I'll be looking forward to your show. Have a good night.
Thanks, Lawrence. Enjoy the rest of your time out there.
Thank you. That's Nick Shepkowski. He's going to be on coming up next until midnight. Thanks again to everyone involved with the show. The Holiday Inn here in Canton, they were terrific to us here. Our engineer, Mel, did a great job. He's going to be working a 13-hour day tomorrow. I'm sure he's excited about that. Brendan McCaffrey, who has gone above and beyond working this room down here in Canton and getting us on the air. our buddy Andy Garcia, Howard Dinneroff from Westwood One making this happen for us. Mitch Rosen, our program director, for sending me down here. I will have some more coverage for you tomorrow. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Lawrence W. Holmes. I might even pop up on Julie and Maggie's show at some point tomorrow. They will be carrying Brian Urlacher's induction speech. So if you're in the car, you are covered. Thanks to Herb Lawrence, the executive producer of this program, and Christopher Dickens, who is in charge of sound. I'll be back on the air Monday at The Score, and maybe I'll be back on the air tomorrow. We shall see. Have a great night and enjoy the induction ceremony tomorrow. Shep's next.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.